The absolute has no rational structure. This is the absolute philosopher, Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, the University of Philosophy here in Campo, California. The absolute has no rational structure. This is very true. This is the thought of German philosopher Hegel and Greek philosopher Parmenides in believing that what is rational is real and what is real is rational. Well, the absolute has no rational structure. This is a positive truth, something that we can think about very seriously, although nothing has to be true. These things that we say are positive truths, they could just as easily not be, because we can have anything we want. We can make any statements we want. We can make any conclusions we want. And for us, at the moment of making that conclusion, for us, at the moment of making the decision that this is so, it is so for that moment. And then another moment comes along, and another fact is put into motion, and another being is put into motion. For instance, you might say that this house stands on the corner, and it is a two-story house. It is four bedrooms. It has a living room, a family room, and kitchen, and dining room, and all sorts of beautiful things about it. And it's a lovely house. It's on a big lot where lots of room for the children to play in the backyard with all their wonderful swing equipment that their parents have put up for them. It's a lovely house. It's made of brick, and it has a lovely style to it. And it's a swimming pool in the backyard, oh yes. And it's a lovely, lovely, lovely place. It is really lovely. Well, Dad goes to work in the morning. Mother goes to her club or activity, and the children are all at school. And along comes a little thing called a hurricane or a tornado, and it sweeps down through the town, and everybody says, oh dear, what is going on now? And Mother and Dad and the family come home, and their brick house with its swimming pool and its lovely yard is no longer there. It is just not there. In its place is just an empty spot. All of the lovely trees that they planted, all of the shrubs that they planted, all of the the things that they put there, the brick house, solid as can be, is gone. Every brick is gone. The swimming pool is still there. There's a hole in the ground, and all the water is whooshed out of it. It's nothing. The trees that were so beautiful in the backyard that had been there for hundreds of years are now missing. It is an empty lot for all intent and purposes. And the family says, well, for goodness sakes. Well, the family felt that they would live there eternally, and that that is a wonderful place to be, and that barring anything unforeseen, that that house would be there for them to enjoy as they grew up in their years, and one day they might retire and sell it and buy a place in the country or something, which seems to be what a lot of people talk about. And lo and behold, it's not there. The absolute has no rational structure. We say that things are there. We say that the real is there. But you say, well, now that's a relative thing that you're talking about now. You're not talking about an absolute thing. You're not talking about something that is a concept that is untouchable by the physical universe. That's true. That's true. But did you, for a moment, jump in there and say, oh my goodness sakes, oh my goodness sakes, there goes their house. There goes that wonderful place where they were living. There goes their trees and their their plants and everything else. There goes everything that they worked for all their life. Oh dear. And you see, that was just an expression. And as an expression, it was an expression of what they believed about themselves. Now, did they really believe that that house was going to be there? Did they really believe that it was going to be something that they could use and enjoy all the years of their choice of living there? Not really. Because if they had believed that, then it could never have been removed. If they had believed in absolute, it has no rational structure to it. It has no difference today, tomorrow, or in the future. It's always the same. Absolute has no rational structure. So, you see, we have not learned yet to think in absolute terms. We are thinking in relative terms even when we're thinking about absolute. Absolute is the unchangeable. Absolute is the concept. Absolute is the principle that stands behind all existence. Now, we live in a relative world. What is rational is real, and what is real is rational. These are concepts that the German philosopher and the Greek philosopher were thinking had a great deal to say for it. But they also said the absolute has no rational structure. And so when you think about the irrational having no absolute, having no rational structure, then you cannot think of it being any different from what it is from, if you can say, one moment to the next. All time is now. If the rational, if the structure that doesn't exist still allows us to see things changing from moment to moment, then we are not living in an absolute consciousness. How could we begin to live in an absolute consciousness in a relative world? Well, in the first place, you cannot live in an absolute consciousness in a relative world. You cannot live in an absolute consciousness in a relative world. You can live in an absolute consciousness, and in that same light, you create that appearing relative world, an absolute world. It would mean, then, that there would never be any change. It would mean that the house on the corner would always be there, for instance. But, of course, there is no house on the corner. There is no corner. There are no families. There are no people. Well, Herb, this is kind of strange. How can we think anything about absolute if all of our relative thinking has no place to fit there? All of our relative thinking does not belong there. All of our rational thinking doesn't belong there. That's very true. People love to think deeply. They love to think profoundly. They love to think in areas that sort of titillate their mind and tantalize their present thinking system. And as long as they like to do that, the doors are open for them. But the day will come when they don't want to do that, because that's a bother. That's a bother to always be thinking in terms of something that you are not experiencing in your everyday life. But we can experience them in our everyday life. We can know it, because we can have an everyday life that is absolute. And you say, well, that's not reasonable, because an everyday life has to have in it rational conclusions. It has to have rational thinking. And that's what you think. We think that these are things that have to be. And because we think it, we limit ourselves, and we never probe more deeply. We never desire more fully to understand what absolute means. When we begin to see that in absolute there are segments of all these things that exist, we in our relative world play the game of putting them together. Let's look again at children. Children are such a beautiful example. Here the child is playing in the play box. He's playing in the sandbox, and he's by himself, and yet he's surrounded by people. He has his wonderful buildings. He has his wonderful streets and cars, perhaps not as you and I would structure them. But he sees them structured however he wishes. He may see them structured more beautifully than any that we could ever conceive of seeing. And he sees the concepts behind all these things. He doesn't need the evidence to make the concept real. The concept stands real in his consciousness. And as he's playing, you say to him, "Well, what are you doing, son?" And he says, "Well, I'm in the middle of the city here." And the father says, "Well, how interesting." And the mother walks by the daughter, and she's playing in another corner of the play box, and she says, "Well, sweetheart, what are you doing?" And she says, "Well, I'm having tea." And the mother says, "Well, how interesting. Do you have tea like I do when I invite my friends over and we sit and talk?" "Oh, no." "Well, how do you do it, Pumpkin?" And her daughter answers, "Well, Mom, when I have tea, what we do is we are already full. And we just sit and share ideas." "Well, how do you share ideas?" "Well, we don't talk, because we merely think what is in our mind, and the other knows what we're thinking." "Well, that seems an advanced way of the mental world. That's a very wonderful idea. How did you come up with that thought?" "Well, this I've always had. You know, Mom, I've always known what you think, and I've always known what Dad thinks. I've always known what John over there thinks, and I know what I think. And everything that I know, it just stands as something by itself. I can't understand how to say it, but it stands by itself. And it doesn't need anything else to give it support." "Well, that's kind of a heady way of thinking. That's pretty good. Now, what do you mean it doesn't have to have anything else to give it support?" "Well, when I think of having tea, I don't think of having tea like you do, where I sit and talk with my friends about things that are interesting to them. When I'm having tea, I'm thinking of..." Now, the daughter wouldn't be able to say these terms, but for our convenience, we say them. "I'm thinking of having concepts. I think of the ideal form of tea. I think of the ideal form of friends getting together. I think of the ideal form of what it means. And you know, Mom, I've come up with this thought that when I have tea with my friends, I am in oneness with my friends. We don't have to have tea together, which merely means we visit or are together. What we have together is oneness of thought. Each of us is thinking virtually the same thought and coming up with new and wonderful awarenesses of it." And the mother says, "My dear, I have certainly a profound little girl here." "Mom." "Yes, what do you mean?" "I am not a little girl." "Well, what do you mean you're not a little girl? You're only about 8 years, you're only 8 years old. You're going to be 9 next week." "But, Mom." "Well, what do you mean?" "I am a thing. I am the oneness. I am the allness. You and Dad talk about this so often, and I'm listening in the background." "Yes, I can see that you are. But what does it mean to be the oneness and the allness?" "Well, Mom, when I am the oneness, I am everywhere, and I am doing everything, and I'm aware of everything, but yet I am not that thing." "Oh, really?" "No. Absolute has no rational structure. I am not an idea in process. I am an idea in existence as a point, as an ideal, as a concept." "Oh, sweetheart, your father and I will have to sit and talk with you on this to get a little more understanding. Will you share with us?" "Oh, yeah, Mom. But the thing is, you and Dad sometimes are just a little bit slow." "What do you mean, slow?" "Well, you limit yourself by the things you think on the relative level, instead of letting that relative level go and no longer letting the relative level be the gauge by which you understand absolute. Because you cannot compare, as you tell me, Mom, you cannot compare apples and oranges. They are two different type of substances. An apple is one thing and an orange is another. They are both foods and they are both benefit to us, but they are different things. Oh my goodness sakes. What is rational is real, and what is real is rational. Really? Mom, that went out a long time ago. What I say is absolute has no rational structure. Absolute cannot be thought of in rational terms. It cannot be thought of in human thinking, in human words, in human ideas. But dear, if it cannot be thought of in those things, how can we think about it at all? Mom, that's where my friends and I have the best way to do it. We merely think our thought, and we each know what the other is thinking, and we are one. And in this oneness, we have the conclusion of all of the information we need. In other words, we know all of the concepts that exist, and we have come to the realization that there are not many concepts. There is only one concept, the concept of is. And the concept of is all, and all is rationale, and therefore there is no all, there is only is. And this is where we're living. The absolute has no rational structure. Ooh-wee. Yes, you're right, sweetheart. The rational has no... the absolute has no rational structure. I will have to do some thinking about that. And now, you call it the is, huh? Yep. Yeah, you must have heard your father and I speaking about that, that the is the only reality that there is. And all the rest are just games that we play to amuse us. And when we return in our thinking to the only reality there is of the is, then all of these other things just fade away, and only the is stands forth in its totality. Yeah. I have a lot to become aware of. Mom, you have nothing to become aware of. You are the is too. You are all. You are nothing. You are everything. Mom, you are me. I am you. Mom, don't you know absolute has no rational structure? Don't you know that? Well, sweetheart, you tell me that, but it's still a bunch of terms that are that are in my mind boggled by my past, in my mind boggled by all the things that I have learned, in my mind boggled by the idea of what is reality. And happily, you and your brother have not had that problem. You don't think that reality is what you see. Reality is the is. Yes, Mom. Yes, Mom. That's it. That's it. You got it. You got it. Life is wonderful. And we can think about absolute until the cows come home. We can think about absolute forever and ever. And the simpler we get in our thinking, the more profound is our thinking. And the less we understand of our thinking. Because that which is absolute is a pure concept, untouched by the relative. It has its own sacred, separate reality. It is and is. Have a wonderful day, do beautiful things, and know that the absolute philosopher is having a lot more fun than you'll ever imagine. I love you, I love you, I love you.